A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The truth is the most convincing story that maps onto reality, and that's why the central narrative is falling apart.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
We must see the central narrative for the fiction that it is. We are Americans.
While elections are sometimes messy, this was a secure election.
The founders began the fight for human liberty and self-governance, and it's up to us to finish the job.
I tell you what, we are in a truth emergency right now.
This is the end game.
It's Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024, the 1169th day of dystopia. I'm your moderator, Chris Paul. Let's be reasonable. A warm welcome and hello to all of you listening to the podcast on the day of its release. The only way to do that is by becoming a paid subscriber at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as little as $50 a year or $5 a month, and in doing so, you will be supporting me, the work I do, and this show as it expands. And if you can't, or you simply don't want to, continue listening to the podcast for free a couple days later on a wide variety of podcast platforms and, of course, Rumble. All I ask is that you share it with your friends. You can find the links to the podcast, the writing, the social media, and the merch site by visiting linktree.com/imyourmoderator. All right, so let's get started with a couple add-ons from yesterday's show and then get into the current status of our election fraud apparatus. Didn't mean to rhyme, but I did it. Now I'm proud of it. So yesterday we talked about the fake Biden administration's proclamation, their recognition statement of the Trans Day of Visibility on March 31st, which this year happened to be Easter. So we had the illegitimate president announcing, as the representative of the American people from our seat of government, that we were going to all be recognizing a transgender day of visibility on Easter Sunday. Now that sparked a backlash, as you might imagine, and no, it doesn't matter that some guy in Michigan who calls himself a trans activist, started this day in 2009. The idea that a trans day of visibility is something that an American president should be recognizing is preposterous, regardless of whether the conflict in timing with Easter was intentional or just a coincidence. And so on Sunday, when the fake president was hosting at the White House their traditional Easter egg roll, Biden was asked by a reporter what he thought about House Speaker Mike Johnson's criticisms of that statement. Johnson said that the fake White House betrayed the central tenet of Easter. Biden said that Johnson was thoroughly uninformed and responded, "I didn't do that," seeming to refer to that statement. In Fox News' reporting, they write, in a statement to Fox News Digital, a spokesperson for the White House downplayed the president's comments, noting that he didn't choose the date and that he has issued the same proclamation every year. The spokesperson from the illegitimate White House said in an email, "President Biden is right. He did nothing in conflict with the tenets of Easter, which he celebrated yesterday, nor did he choose the date of March 31st for Transgender Day of Visibility, which has been set since 2009. But you got to wonder what Biden meant when he said, "I didn't do that." It's entirely possible that he meant he didn't put out that statement recognizing the Transgender Day of Visibility. There's a strong chance Joe Biden had no idea that there has ever been a Transgender Day of Visibility, because there is such a small percentage of people in this country who would even think of something so preposterous. And that could be why the spokesman from the illegitimate administration was so clear in framing what it was that Biden didn't do. But virtually no one believes that Joe Biden is actually in control of anything or releasing or initiating his own statements. And to be honest, in terms of recognition of every special day of each individual interest group who has gotten Congress to declare their special day for them, it would be unsurprising for presidents to just delegate that to someone else. But either way, of course, the buck stops with them. Now, Joe Biden's communications are not put out by Joe Biden. Joe Biden is not running his Twitter or his Facebook or his Instagram or whatever other social media. Joe Biden has no idea how to do public messaging and public communications whatsoever. Very few things could be more obvious than that. As soon as Joe Biden goes out on his own to begin saying things, everything starts falling apart. People make fun of how ridiculous and sometimes illegible Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa's tweets are. Grassley's like 91, and he doesn't really seem like he knows how to type on a phone. But that's kind of what gives Grassley's communications their authenticity. You're like, okay, yeah, this is an old guy who's not really familiar with this young people technology. It's quite clear that all of Joe Biden's social media presence is conceived of by someone else. Joe Biden just doesn't have it in him to communicate the way Joe Biden's internet presence communicates. You might remember a couple of years ago when Jen Psaki and Karine Jean-Pierre would often say that a statement was released in the president's voice, trying to give the implication that it really was Joe Biden communicating. It just wasn't him necessarily doing the typing. Karine Jean-Pierre has even in the past accidentally posted tweets, I mean, X posts, in what they refer to as Joe Biden's voice from her own X, formerly Twitter, account. It's not a conspiracy theory or a leap in logic to suggest that Joe Biden really doesn't know much of what Joe Biden is saying. And it's widely accepted that Joe Biden isn't running his own communications. He's not running his social media. He goes into press conferences with prepared cards of what his remarks will be, where he should stand, the names of everyone in the room, which reporters he's supposed to call on to field which questions, and the answer is also prepared for him as well. Virtually nothing in Joe Biden's public-facing communications persona is actually initiated by Joe Biden, and people just accept that. We have a quote-unquote president who is communicating someone else's words to us while he is implementing someone else's agenda and taking the actions someone else has told him to take. And we can shrug and wave it off when it's something that's kind of seemingly irrelevant, like social media, But then it's kind of important to remember that when Donald Trump is posting on his social media, we have a pretty strong understanding that it is actually Donald Trump writing the posts. And then the mainstream media goes absolutely insane that Donald Trump said this or Donald Trump said that. Joe Biden isn't even expected to do his own communications. And from the perspective of the uniparty regime, who just want the agenda and the messaging properly implemented and disseminated, they actually think it's better that the president is not actually communicating with the American people. It gives him a level of plausible deniability in any sort of comms that go bad and receive that kind of public backlash. And it allows them to message in a way that can't be as easily criticized because it's all very refined and sterilized before anyone actually sees it. But it's funny because it kind of blurs the lines between what Joe Biden as quote-unquote president is and is not responsible for. I mean, we know he's not doing his comms. Okay, fine. Joe Biden is really old. He's demented. He's a corrupt pervert. He is a decades-long political criminal. He was mentored by a Klansman. He used to take inappropriate showers with his daughter. Maybe this is not the guy you just want to give free rein to when it comes to communicating with the American public. That's kind of bad if we are being told that that man is the most powerful man in the world. But people accept it because they think that those communications on social media are kind of unimportant in a sense. Because we all use social media and we're very casual in our use of social media. We don't put a whole lot of stock in most of those statements or most of the content we put out. It's immediate. It captures a moment. It's temporary. People forget about it. But where does the line get drawn for Joe Biden? Which aspects of the job of President of the United States of America are actually being initiated and performed by Joe Biden? And you can go all the way up the list to controlling our military and make a strong argument that Joe Biden is not controlling any of them. And when you understand that, you understand that Joe Biden in very real ways does not have the ability to wield the ostensible power of that office. And that doesn't even necessarily have to be in a devolution sense where he literally doesn't have final say on anything he's supposed to have final say on. It can even simply be an indication that there is no reason for all of the various parts of the American administrative state, the executive branch, the deep state, to even bother checking in with Joe Biden or getting his permission to do anything because he doesn't have the ability to say no. And of course, you can also view it in a devolution sense and wonder how much of what we have traditionally understood to be the role and the powers of the president of the United States of America is simply walled off from Joe Biden. He just doesn't have access to do all of the things that we have traditionally understood a president to be able to do. Now, if you're satisfied that Joe Biden meant he didn't violate the tenets of Easter with the statement he put out, okay. All good. But that would suggest that Biden knew the statement, knew the context of the reporter's question, knew what Johnson said, knew what Johnson meant, then thought up an answer by himself and muttered it in his demented slur talk while walking away, assuming that his blanket denial would just solve the problem. It's remarkable that we have reached the point where the so-called United States president cannot be assumed to be in control of anything in his administration, including himself and his own words. Now, on the flip side, absolutely no one doubts that Donald Trump is responsible for his own communications. Donald Trump speaks off the cuff all the time. When he is asked a question and decides to answer that question, Donald Trump is giving his answer. Donald Trump's people and his administration are there to implement his agenda. He is not there as a puppet figure, as a Manchurian candidate, to implement someone else's agenda. No one would suggest that yesterday when Donald Trump seized on this moment and these communications and twisted them around to his advantage, that that was all set up through his comms strategy team with the wording that he used already focus grouped by a bunch of very serious intellectuals and McKinsey consultants. Trump held a few public events yesterday, as yesterday was a fake primary election day around the country. We'll get into that in just a second. But he gave a rally speech in Wisconsin yesterday where he talked about how November 5th of this year, what we expect to be election day, will be a Christian day of visibility. And he followed that up with a post on Truth Social saying election day, November 5th, will be the most important day in the history of our country. It will also be Christian Visibility Day, the biggest turnout of Christians in the history of our country. And both of those statements are very likely true, at least in the world where we do have an election on November 5th of this year. And naturally, this was extremely triggering to all of the uniparty communists in the country. This sentiment was represented in the pages of the Washington Post by the permanently triggered Philip Bump, who you might remember from this viral clip last year.
What do you take from the text message to his adult daughter, Hunter's text message, that I have to give 50% of my income to Pop?
I have no idea what that means. I don't. I have no idea what that means.
Well, it's
I know, it's circumstantial evidence, and you prefer that.
No, what could it mean?
I have no idea.
But doesn't
it, I don't know.
Well,
I appreciate your...
Has anybody asked her?
I don't know.
Don't you think somebody should ask her?
Okay. Like, I just said I don't know, and I don't know what to make of it, so I have nothing to say about it. What do you want me to say?
Yeah, but you say there's no evidence, but then there's a text message where he says, I give Pop 50% of my money. That's evidence.
Okay, well, fine.
So
it's evidence. I appreciate you having me on.
Who do you think is being more... I listen to that and I'm saying...
I feel like you want me to leave, like, just walk out in the middle of this because that way you can, like...
You can go. Right. Is this a standard, really? This is the way the Washington Post handles people who disagree with them?
Yeah, when I agree to be on for 45 minutes...
Go.
And then I get on for an hour and 15, after a while I go.
That is the sort of man that Philip Bump is. But the headline today in the Washington Post, Trump's Christian Visibility Day bit overstates his Christian support. And as soon as you read a headline like that, you know exactly what the argument is going to be. According to the polls that I'm about to choose, Christians don't like Donald Trump all that much, at least not as much as people would assume that they do. And then once you've established that, you can say that Donald Trump doesn't represent the real Christians. And once you've done that, you just fall right back into that loop where all of Donald Trump's supporters are bigots and conspiracy theorists. So among that group, some of them call themselves Christians and act like they're the real Christians. But we all, as very serious intellectuals, know that isn't true. They're just bigots and conspiracy theorists. And if we have time, at the end of the episode, I might share some of Philip Bump's article in the Washington Post from yesterday, where he wonders where QAnon has gone. But just a snippet from this article. What the heck was Biden thinking when he declared Easter Sunday to be Trans Visibility Day? Trump said, suggesting that the declaration, again not originated by Biden, showed, quote, total disrespect to Christians. On November 5th, he added, referring to Election Day, it is going to be called something else. It is going to be called Christian Visibility Day. His supporters ate it up, but this too is overheated. Trump's appeal to Christians is more limited than he suggests, centered on a very specific part of the Christian population. Pew Research Center has conducted post-election polling after the 2016 and 2020 presidential contests in which respondents are validated as having voted. This offers a more robust picture of the electorate than other measures, including on religious identification. According to the Pew Research Center and Washington Post, Trump got about 55% of the Christian vote in each of the past two elections, writes Bump. He only got about a quarter of the vote from everyone else. And in their numbers, they have him winning somewhere around 60% of Protestants and 50% of Catholics, but then losing overwhelmingly to first Hillary Clinton and then Joe Biden with the unaffiliated Christian category and the other category. Here's how Bump concludes. His rhetoric often focuses on elevating Christians in the national conversation, as it did in 2016. He means Christian conservatives, a group that has voted for him loyally in each of his previous presidential runs. Of course, this rhetoric is also rooted in the idea that Christians don't already have a powerful, audible voice, which they do. Now that is Philip Bump's opinion. Trans Visibility Day exists because trans people lack that voice. It's an effort started by a trans woman, aka a man, to demonstrate to other trans individuals that they are not isolated and alone, as many are likely to feel. The trans community, after all, is still alienated and derided in much of the country. Well, that's because they are pretending that they have accomplished the impossible. It is a clear mental illness that the rest of us are supposed to treat as normal, factual, and scientific. That is why it is derided. Christian conservatives, on the other hand, are not. They may feel alienated, both because the voices of the growing non-Christian population are heard more often, and because folks like Trump and Fox News hosts try to amplify a sense of aggrievement. How about that? I mean, to even be able to write that sentence is incredible. Philip Bump sounds quite aggrieved at this point. I think we will also be seeing a massive reversal in the reported growth trend of the non-Christian population. Part of the awakening is traveling back in that direction. They often appear to feel disadvantaged or threatened because the interests and values of non-Christians and non-conservatives simply exist. Oh. But in part as a response to that perceived threat, Christian conservatives still have enormous institutional and cultural power that trans people very much do not. Well, trans people don't have institutional and cultural power because they represent such a tiny percentage, and all of them are mentally ill. In that passage, Bump links to his own article from a couple of years ago, where he theorizes that the Supreme Court, among other institutions, is actually in the business of protecting Christian beliefs and ideologies in the Dobbs decision that overturned Roe v. Wade. You see, that was just a gift to Christians and not decided on constitutional grounds. Of course, it was decided on constitutional grounds. Roe v. Wade was a gift to the abortion industry and their agenda, which we should rightly see as just a segment of the big pharma industry and their agenda. Christians are not the group with outsized power in this country, although other religions certainly do have outsized power in this country. Back to the article. This is Trump's shtick, though. You, we are embattled. We Christians, a mantle Trump adopted in earnest once he entered national politics, we whites, aggrievement is the essence of MAGA-ism. Do you like how he just used a little sleight of hand and pushed race into that as well? As if Black America isn't overwhelmingly Christian? As if Hispanic America isn't overwhelmingly Christian? At some point, you have to be amazed that they're even still trying this. But of course, Philip Bump and people like him really believe all of this is true. On Election Day, Trump will probably win more votes from Christians than Biden does, as he did 4 years ago. But that won't make it Christian Visibility Day, in part since he can't reasonably claim the support of Christians broadly. Also, in part, in any practical sense, every day in America is one on which the Christian community is quite visible. Gotta say, Philip Bump sounds kind of aggrieved. The Uniparty seems to be having a hard time figuring out how to handle all of this. Now, as I said, last night saw a series of four more fake primaries. Connecticut, New York, Rhode Island, and Wisconsin. Donald Trump obviously won all of those. Joe Biden, the winner in the Democrat primaries. And in his home state of Delaware, they just canceled it altogether. But the big news from last night, if you can call it that, was the results in Wisconsin for two ballot measures that would amend the Wisconsin Constitution. The races were both called within 45 minutes of the polls closing, when the results were actually much closer than these final results. Sometimes you'll see them doing that so that the news will come out, yes, this ballot measure has definitely passed, but the margin will look low. It will look like The winning side won, but not by as much as the final result will indicate. And that was the case here. And let's go to the New York Times for their story on this. This is from last night in the New York Times. Wisconsin voters approve bans on private aid for election offices. Voters in Wisconsin approved adding language to the state constitution on Tuesday that will forbid officials from accepting donations of money or staffing to help run elections, the Associated Press said. The questions were placed on the state's primary ballot by the Republican-controlled legislature. They were rooted in complaints about the 2020 election, including objections to donations that a group supported by the billionaire Mark Zuckerberg and Priscilla Chan, his wife, made to local election offices, as well as assistance given to election administrators by nonprofit groups. The donations could be used to defray any of a wide variety of costs, like polling place rental fees, drive-through voting sites, or training for poll workers. But that's not all this money was used for, of course. It was used to fund ballot drop boxes. It was used to pay off election judges and other election officials. There were conditions to incentivize them to further implement the election processes recommended by that organization, the Center for Tech and Civic Life, run by former Obama guy David Plouffe, who wrote the book on how to beat Trump in 2020. We talked about this just a couple of weeks ago. Plouffe essentially outlined the ways that they would end up stealing the 2020 election. That CTCL money also came with what was called a clawback provision, so that if the people receiving this money, the towns, the counties, whatever, if they received the money and they didn't meet the expectations, the CTCL could claw back that money. Let's go back to the article. Mr. Zuckerberg said he no longer planned to award grants to election offices. President Biden narrowly won Wisconsin in 2020, a result that some Republicans tried and failed to overturn afterward. Voters in the state, which Donald Trump carried in 2016, tend to split about evenly between the two major parties, and the state could be decisive in this year's presidential race. Republicans have argued that funding for running elections should be provided solely by the government and should be allocated equitably to all jurisdictions. Opponents of the ballot question concerning outside staffing for election offices said Wisconsin law already made clear who could or could not work as an election official, and that passing the amendment could have unintended consequences. The article notes that Republicans in Wisconsin chose the ballot measure route because communist governor of Wisconsin, who is obviously illegitimate, Tony Evers, had vetoed in 2021 an attempt by the legislature to simply outlaw this private funding for Wisconsin's elections. The article concludes this way. When Mr. Trump tried to overturn the results of the 2020 election, three conservative Wisconsin Supreme Court justices dissented when four of their colleagues rejected his claims. Since then, Republican lawmakers have tried to remove the head of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. It's weird that the New York Times doesn't mention that it's because she is directly involved in the stealing of Wisconsin elections. Strange. All the while, a fresh set of district maps recently ordered by the state Supreme Court's new liberal majority threatens Republicans' longtime gerrymandered hold on the legislative branch. Now, a lot of people were celebrating last night because obviously this result benefits, at least ostensibly, the cause of election integrity. Eliminating private funding takes away one of the methods used in 2020 to rig and steal elections. But of course, it's not the only way, and it's not the most important way. And then we also run into the problem of cheering on the passage of a ballot measure through the same rigged election system that needs to be fixed in Wisconsin. We have no reason to believe that the results, as reported, accurately reflect the will and intent of the Wisconsin voters. And while I'm certain that Wisconsin voters don't want private funding in their elections, now understanding what effect it has, it's hard to go crazy celebrating things like this when we know that the elections still are not legitimate, and we know that the Uniparty has had 3.5 years to change methods. That is one of the problems with the establishment's push for election integrity. The grassroots are doing great work and they're doing a wonderful job and they're highlighting all the important issues. But at the establishment level, their goal is to make it look like elections are becoming more legitimate. They can say, look at all these accomplishments that we have. You have to trust our elections now. And the truth is, no, we don't. We don't have to trust the elections until the process is simplified with a focus on election integrity rather than just slightly scaling back a system that was designed and created specifically to facilitate the stealing of elections. The idea being to increase public trust in our election processes without actually making our election processes fully trustworthy. I've said many times on this podcast, it's really all or nothing. Either the election process in place is worthy of being trusted by everyone because of its simplicity and its transparency and its accountability, or it's not. For instance, we could be told that a state is moving to quote unquote paper ballots. And we might think, wow, that's a great step toward election integrity. One thing we know we need is hand-marked, hand-counted paper ballots that are cast in person. Well, if we get paper ballots without being hand-counted or hand-marked or cast in person, then the paper ballot alone doesn't get the job done. And of course, in Texas, for instance, they have paper ballots that are generated by the voting machine. So you press little buttons on an iPad screen, and then a receipt is printed out with a code that can only be read by machine. That is where your actual vote exists on that quote-unquote paper ballot, which is not a hand-marked, hand-counted paper ballot. It is just a receipt from whatever the machine has already done. Then you take that receipt and you slide it into another machine that reads the code produced by the first machine, and we're told, hey, it's safe, that's a paper ballot. But no, it isn't. So switching from a fully machine-oriented process to this process that includes something that we can refer to as a paper ballot, well, that doesn't solve the election integrity problem. It's either all on or all off. And this is a key misunderstanding that people still have, partly because the GOP establishment keeps convincing people that this is what the really hard work is. You see, we've got to change the laws in our system. Can we guarantee that the politicians changing the laws aren't themselves the beneficiaries of stolen elections? Of course we can't guarantee that. Elections are stolen all across the country, from your local community all the way up to the President of the United States. And when you understand that, the idea that some Republican legislature in a swing state like Georgia, for instance, implementing one or two or even 10 different measures that seem to suggest election integrity is then capable of giving us a legitimate and trustworthy election result is patently absurd. And this isn't to denigrate the work of people at the grassroots level or even in state politics, of patriots around the country who are trying to improve things for everyone. I appreciate the hell out of those people, most of all for standing up and telling the truth about how our elections are stolen in the first place. But our respect for their work and their action in good faith doesn't then require us to say, mission accomplished, now we can trust these election outcomes. There probably is not a more counterproductive reaction to have to this news than to think, okay, Wisconsin's elections are good to go now. We should definitely trust the outcome of November's election in Wisconsin. If the election system is still rigged, then we know that they allowed for that result yesterday. Again, apart from the fact that the people really do support that result, it would mean that the Uniparty already understood that result was coming and they have been planning for it. And again, this is just an amendment to the Wisconsin Constitution, the state constitution that they already did not follow in 2020. And with the knowledge that despite the fact that the courts have ruled that certain methods of the Wisconsin 2020 election, like those mail-in ballot drop boxes, were unconstitutional, Joe Biden still remains in the position of fake president. And as the New York Times article mentioned, they've already stolen back the Supreme Court in Wisconsin. So knowing this result is coming allows them plenty of time to figure out a workaround, just use a different method. And at the end of the day, they have already proven they don't actually care about following the state constitution. This is true of states all across the country and how they conduct their elections. And in addition to that, they've made it impossible to hold anyone accountable. Now, people hear this and they think, well, you're blackpilling. You're telling us there's no hope. I'm not telling you that. I think we've already won in every way that matters, and we will close this game out in whatever way we have to. But at the same time, it's important to understand that this result and the reporting of this result are essentially a PR campaign to promote that Wisconsin now has elections with integrity that can be trusted by not only the voters of Wisconsin, but by voters across the nation. What could be more counterproductive than convincing ourselves that that is true? People shouldn't be bummed out by this. I don't even understand why anyone would be. We saw how bad the situation was in the aftermath of the 2020 election, and we've seen it play out again and again and again since then. Every single primary and general election each year has been undermined through the same sorts of processes. It's not more hopeful or more optimistic or more productive to pretend that the situation is not as bad as it is. We should stare the problem in the face and keep calling it out until the problem is actually solved in a full, comprehensive manner. We are not to that point. We are nowhere close to that point. And the more that people want to convince themselves that we are, the less work gets done to actually solve the problems. And if you want to know how the problems will never be solved, well, if Donald Trump is announced the winner on November 5th and everyone just thinks, oh, thank goodness, that means our elections are solved, well, you're going to have stolen elections forever. And if you understand that it's all or nothing, elections either have integrity or they don't. The results can be trusted or they can't. Elections are transparent or they're not. People are held accountable or they aren't. Then you understand that the only responsible position to take is either we have 100% faith in these elections or we have 0% faith in these elections. If we don't have 100% faith in these elections, then we should not respect the reported results. It simply is not good enough, and if people do not demand better, people will not get better. You cannot stop the regime's propaganda media outlets from reporting on these elections in a way that benefits that global regime and their uniparty representation in the United States. But you can do your part in making sure that everyone you know understands that our elections cannot be trusted. If you want legitimate elections, that requires a society-wide understanding that our elections are currently not legitimate. Nothing short of that is going to do. None of what I just said indicates that I am not optimistic in my outlook when it comes to American politics and the situation that we will be facing a year from now, or 2 years from now, or 10 years from now, or 100 years from now. Well, we won't be facing that. Unless, of course, they do upload our consciousness into the cloud, and come on, that's not happening. Now, while we don't want to fool ourselves into believing that all of these elections have just suddenly gained election integrity by, on the Republican side, telling us that we have actually achieved the results and the outcomes that we wanted, Donald Trump winning all of these fake primaries, and ballot measures like the ones voted on in Wisconsin last night have succeeded, that doesn't mean there isn't progress in that direction, and that people aren't out there working on these issues and publicizing some of the successes. Here's one from the Associated Press yesterday. Judge sides with conservative group in its push to access and publish voter rolls online. New Mexico election officials violated public disclosure provisions of the National Voter Registration Act by refusing to provide voter rolls to a conservative group and its public online database, a federal judge has ruled. The opinion and order Friday from Albuquerque-based U.S. District Judge James Browning mostly sided with the Voter Reference Foundation and its efforts to expand a free database of registered voters so that groups and individuals can take it upon themselves to try to find potential irregularities or fraud. Election officials in several states and privacy advocates have raised alarms about a push by several conservative groups to gain access to state voter rolls, saying the lists could find their way into the hands of malicious actors and that voters could be disenfranchised through intimidation, possibly by canceling their registrations to avoid public disclosure of their home addresses and party affiliation. Now, that right there is an argument from the uniparty regime that controls our elections on why voter registries shouldn't be publicly available. That makes it so that that part of the election process becomes totally opaque and the people running it totally unaccountable. Are they doing that for the cause of election integrity? Of course not. They're doing that to protect the election fraud apparatus because the registration process is one of the most critical and most manipulated parts of that election fraud apparatus. They have public-private partnerships between the states around the country and various non-governmental organizations and private groups to run their registrations. Let's take, for instance, Rock the Vote. Most people remember Rock the Vote from back in the 90s. They had a spin-off organization in 2020 called More Than a Vote, where they partnered with people like LeBron James to set up voting centers and provide resources so that former felons and sometimes current felons could vote in the 2020 election. Why? Because they needed those bodies. They needed those names, those identifications in order to provide themselves with as much leeway as they could to achieve whatever number of quote unquote votes they needed to achieve to substantiate their already predetermined outcomes. These public-private partnerships allow for these outside groups to directly access the voter registries in these states, which is especially important for those states that allow voter registration all the way up to and including Election Day. That concept is always sold to us like someone goes to the polls ready to participate in their democratic process. And whoops, they're not registered. Now they can't vote. They're being disenfranchised. Well, we can't have that, so we had better allow them to register at their polling place on Election Day so that they can vote and not be disenfranchised. That's how we're supposed to think of it. Our fellow American citizens might be denied their ability to participate in the process. That's not fair. That doesn't reflect the values of our country. We must allow for same-day registration. Well, the problem is when you have these public-private partnerships and these outside groups who receive a whole lot of money to create voter registrations, I mean register lots of voters, they then have the ability to flood new registries into the process. And at that point, all you need to create more votes is the printing of a ballot, which isn't necessary because you vote on a machine that prints a receipt. That obviously happens right on the spot. And then that ballot just needs to be received and counted. And they control all of those elements. The registration part is only a small part. They want that system to be opaque so that they can continue to operate in this manner. They don't want anyone to actually be able to audit that part of the process because then people might say things like, hey, how did all of these thousands of new registrations come in on the afternoon of Election Day and why did they all vote for Joe Biden? But let's go back to the article from the Associated Press. New Mexico election law bans the publication of voter registration data. It restricts the use of the data to political campaigning and non-commercial government purposes. But Browning ruled that the system, quote, severely burdens the circulation of voter data among the public, end quote, and violates federal disclosure requirements. The data sharing ban largely deprives individuals and entities of the ability to engage with disclosed records in such a way that facilitates identification of voter registration related irregularities, Browning wrote. And that is exactly what the opaqueness of the system is intended to provide the uniparty regime, who has full control over the election fraud apparatus. His ruling builds on a federal appeals court ruling in February that Maine must release its voter list to another conservative-backed group, the Public Interest Legal Foundation, that's conducting independent audits by comparing voter rolls in one state against those in another. The Voter Reference Foundation's VoteRef.com database so far includes information from 32 states and the District of Columbia. It is run by Gina Svoboda, an organizer of former President Donald Trump's 2020 re-election campaign in Arizona, who was chosen in January as chair of the Arizona Republican Party. Skipping ahead, the New Mexico Secretary of State's office will appeal the order, said agency spokesman Alex Curtis. Secretary of State Maggie Toulouse Oliver, a Democrat, quote, will continue to do everything in her power to advocate for the protection of voters' personal information and ultimately encourage voter participation, Curtis said in an email. That's right. All of this is being done to protect the voters. From what? From people harassing them in their homes because their names are in a voter registration database? No. It's protecting them from themselves and what they would vote for. That's what the communists are concerned about. They can't have all these voters voting them out of power because really they're doing what's best for all these people who are too stupid to understand what is actually best for them. That is what we need the communists for. We can't take care of ourselves. We can't handle our own lives. So we need people in positions of power to do all of that for us. Even if we don't want them there, they are protecting us from our own bad ideas. Curtis praised portions of the judge's order that dismissed the foundation's allegations that New Mexico engaged in free speech violations under its restrictions on the use of voter information. Baseless claims of widespread voter fraud. Baseless claims! Largely fueled by Trump's insistence that the 2020 presidential election was stolen, are part of what's driving conservative groups' efforts to obtain the voter rolls, leading to lawsuits seeking voter registration data in several states, including Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvania Office of Open Records has refused to hand over voter information to the Voter Reference Foundation, saying that publishing it would put every registered voter at greater risk of identity theft or misuse of their information. Again, they are just trying to protect you from bad actors. You know, the sorts of people who might engage in identity theft, and definitely not the sorts of people who might steal elections, because those people already have all the access to all of that data. It's just normal citizens of each state that can't access it. Pennsylvania officials prevailed in state court, and the foundation in February sued in federal court to obtain the voter rolls, citing provisions of the National Voter Registration Act. John Davison, director of litigation at the Washington-based Electronic Privacy Information Center, said the federal rulings in New Mexico and Maine preserve state voter confidentiality programs for assault and stalking victims that conceal home addresses, but otherwise would, quote, essentially eliminate, end quote, state discretion on the release of voter lists. States have until now adopted confidentiality safeguards around voter data that vary in their details, he said. This is really cutting all that away and saying you can't place those kinds of restrictions on data disclosure. Now, it should be quite clear to everyone that the people opposed to this data disclosure are not opposed to it because they are worried about people's safety. They could not be worried any less about people's safety because, of course, these are the people who encouraged masking and lockdowns and vaccine mandates. These are the people who support the global slave trade and all the problems that come along with that. They don't care about people's safety. What they care about is making sure that the members of the Uniparty involved with stealing elections cannot be held accountable for manipulating the systems. Without countless thousands of additional voter registrations, they would not be able to run their election fraud apparatus the way that is required for them to achieve the results they have already determined in the event that the elections can actually be audited. If they can't be audited, then you would never even get to that point. And of course, they have all sorts of measures in place to prevent audits, just as we saw in 2020. There was another win for election integrity this week in Tarrant County, Texas. This is from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Tarrant County approves use of pre-numbered ballots. Do they ensure election integrity? The Tarrant County Election Board Tuesday approved an initiative to use pre-numbered ballots in the general election in November. In a briefing to the county commissioners ahead of the board's vote, Tarrant County Election Administrator Clint Ludwig said that pre-numbered ballots would increase election security and allow for more accurate auditing in the case of voter fraud inquiries. The practice, however, is outdated, largely unused by electoral authorities elsewhere in the United States, and, contrary to proponents' claims, could actually facilitate voter fraud rather than prevent it, according to legal, political, and computer science experts. I'll trust the experts. Ballots in Tarrant County already receive a unique identifying number at the moment of voting, and adding more identifying information to voters' ballots could potentially make it easier for bad actors to commit fraud like vote buying and voter coercion, according to David Kimball, a political scientist and ballot design specialist at the University of Missouri-St. Louis. The best thing preventing vote buying is the secret ballot, he said in a phone interview. And that is utter nonsense. That is a total inversion within the false reality. I recently read No Treason and The Constitution of No Authority by Lysander Spooner, the 19th century political philosopher who some would call an anarchist. And I think that there's probably some validity to that. But in The Constitution of No Authority, he actually argued that the secret ballot makes it impossible to give the Constitution any authority among the people voting or not voting. He wrote, "As all the different votes are given secretly by secret ballot, there is no legal means of knowing from the votes themselves who votes for and who against the Constitution. Therefore, voting affords no legal evidence that any particular individual supports the Constitution. And where there can be no legal evidence that any particular individual supports the Constitution, it cannot legally be said that anybody supports it. It is clearly impossible to have any legal proof of the intentions of large numbers of men where there can be no legal proof of the intentions of any particular one of them. There being no legal proof of any man's intentions in voting, we can only conjecture them. As a conjecture, it is probable that a very large proportion of those who vote do so on this principle, that if by voting they could but get the government into their own hands or that of their friends and use its power against their opponents, they would then willingly support the Constitution. But if their opponents are to have the power and use it against them, then they would not willingly support the Constitution." And he is arguing all of this in the context of a discussion over whether or not the people of the United States of America are bound by the U.S. Constitution, considering that no one alive actually approved of that Constitution and that our processes wouldn't even allow for that in the first place. And you have to admit he has a point. None of us agreed to the system that we were thrust into. We didn't agree to these laws. We were born into them. And even if by virtue of being born here in this land, we were somehow committed to the U.S. Constitution as written, there is no reason to believe that we are committed to following the Constitution as it has been mangled over the last 2.5 centuries. But you can leave all of that argument aside and simply accept the same argument when it comes to voting for a political candidate. This is most particularly an argument against the secret ballot. But let's continue. In short, men's voluntary support of the Constitution is doubtless, in most cases, wholly contingent upon the question whether, by means of the Constitution, they can make themselves masters or are to be made slaves. Such contingent consent as that is, in law and reason, no consent at all. As everybody who supports the Constitution by voting, if there are any such, does so secretly by secret ballot, and in a way to avoid all responsibility for the acts of his agents or representatives, it cannot legally or reasonably be said that anybody at all supports the Constitution by voting. No man can reasonably or legally be said to do such a thing as to assent to or support the Constitution unless he does it openly and in a way to make himself personally responsible for the acts of his agents, so long as they act within the limits of the power he delegates to them. Now, this all was written 150 years ago, but we hear versions of this in our own lives. Well, if you don't vote, you can't complain. And if you do vote and you lose, well, that's how the process works and you can't complain. We essentially get to the point where the only commonality is that we are not allowed to complain about the governmental structure. There is no way for us to dissent. We cannot withhold our consent, because even if we choose to withhold our consent by abstaining from voting in the first place, we are still, just through our cultural and societal norms, committed to following these representatives, these leaders, and these rules that they hand down to us by virtue of being born here. He goes on. As all voting is secret by secret ballot, and as all secret governments are necessarily only secret bands of robbers, tyrants, and murderers, the general fact that our government is practically carried on by means of such voting only proves that there is among us a secret band of robbers, tyrants, and murderers, whose purpose is to rob, enslave, and so far as necessary to accomplish their purposes, murder the rest of the people. The simple fact of the existence of such a band does nothing toward proving that, quote unquote, the people of the United States, or any one of them, voluntarily supports the Constitution. For all the reasons that have now been given, voting furnishes no legal evidence as to who the particular individuals are, if there are any, who voluntarily support the Constitution. It therefore furnishes no legal evidence that anybody supports it voluntarily. So far, therefore, as voting is concerned, the Constitution, legally speaking, has no supporters at all. As a matter of fact, there is not the slightest probability that the Constitution has a single bona fide supporter in the country. That is to say, there is not the slightest probability that there is a single man in the country who both understands what the Constitution really is and sincerely supports it for what it really is. The ostensible supporters of the Constitution, like the ostensible supporters of most other governments, are made up of three classes. Knaves, a numerous and active class who see in the government an instrument which they can use for their own aggrandizement or wealth. Dupes, a large class, no doubt, each of whom, because he is allowed one voice out of millions in deciding what he may do with his own person and his own property, and because he is permitted to have the same voice in robbing, enslaving, and murdering others that others have in robbing, enslaving, and murdering himself, is stupid enough to imagine that he is a free man, a sovereign, that this is a free government, a government of equal rights, the best government on earth, and such like absurdities. And three, a class who have some appreciation of the evils of government, but either do not see how to get rid of them, or do not choose to so far sacrifice their private interests as to give themselves seriously and earnestly to the work of making a change. And I think that accurately describes the situation as it exists now. Now, this is less an argument against the Constitution as the Constitution is written. It is more an argument against the idea that the Constitution carries with it the full support of, at the time, the American people. And this was an important argument back then, because they are right in the midst of all the conversation surrounding the Civil War. And from these historical records, these historical writings around the Civil War, you can learn quite a lot about your history that you would not have learned in a public school, for instance. Regardless, you do not have to support Lysander Spooner's arguments about the validity of the Constitution to understand that he is correct about the validity of the secret ballot. No one is accountable for any of this. It cannot be proven that any person at all supports this system, much less that all the people support it collectively and separately, that the secret ballot means that no one ever has to take any responsibility for anything. Now, would we want a world where we no longer have the secret ballot? Maybe. That's the sort of discussion we actually need to be having at some point. Does this system work at all? Can it even possibly work? We see all of this as a protection of our privacy, but the people operating the system see this as a way to convince us that everything they do is something that we consented to simply by participating in the process at all. And if we choose not to participate, as Spooner argues, then they still assume the authority to run over us in any way they want. But let's go back to the article. Ballots in federal elections are available for public viewing for 22 months after the election. If a person's vote is tied to a specific number, then someone who has bought or coerced votes could use the pre-numbered ballot list to confirm that they got their bribe or intimidation, obtained the desired result, and that's not a proper English sentence. Kimball said that pre-numbering ballots is, quote-unquote, extremely rare in the United States and that most ballots cast in the country have no identifying numbers on them at all. I don't know anybody that does it, he said. You want the ballots to be anonymous. And this guy Kimball, by the way, is that political scientist at Missouri St. Louis. Andrew Appel, a computer scientist at Princeton who has done extensive research on voting machines, pointed to the same risks associated with serial numbers on ballots. The secret ballot is pretty important as a principle, since well over 100 years ago, to prevent people from being paid or coerced to vote in a certain way, he said in a phone interview. The best way to prevent ballot stuffing and other types of fraud mentioned by proponents of pre-numbered ballots is to staff polling places with a sufficient number of adequately trained election workers, Appel said. The standard practice is to have enough confidence in your poll workers and to pay enough attention to poll worker training. One dishonest poll worker can't stuff ballots, but there's another poll worker that can keep an eye on that. And there you have it. The way to solve this problem isn't by having serialized ballots. It's by providing more funding to hire more poll workers and train them by the people in the Uniparty who run the election fraud apparatus. You could call this the Stacey Abrams method. That's exactly what we need for election integrity in this country. What we need is a million more Ruby Freemans. Now, in 2019, they switched all this up. They put in new rules that allowed a different sort of numbering system. And this was pushed by a man named Hyder Garcia and Hart Intercivic, which is one of the voting machine suppliers, the one that is most commonly used in Texas. Hyder Garcia is the elections administrator in Tarrant County. This is from Texas Monthly on February 29th of this year. Meet the elections administrator falsely accused of rigging Tarrant County for Joe Biden. And I'm not going to go through the whole article, but a couple paragraphs. A 44-year-old Venezuelan American with a neatly trimmed beard and an air of quiet confidence, Garcia may be the best-known elections administrator in the country, and not by choice. After the 2020 presidential election, he unexpectedly found himself at the center of the big lie. The right-wing conspiracy theory that the election had been stolen from Donald Trump. At the time, Garcia was the top elections official in neighboring Tarrant County, home to Fort Worth, Texas's largest Republican-controlled city. When Trump lost Tarrant County to Joe Biden by 1,826 votes out of 834,697 votes, becoming the first Republican presidential candidate to lose the county since 1964, many MAGA leaders decided that Garcia must have rigged the election. Oh, that's because it's obvious that he must have rigged the election in order to win in North Texas. Here's the amazing piece of propaganda, though. If he did rig it, he had done a remarkably poor job. After all, Trump comfortably won Texas as a whole. Now, that is nonsensical. Haider Garcia doesn't control elections in Texas as a whole. And the presidential election wasn't the only election held in Texas in 2020. There were races up and down the ballot that did not include Donald Trump and Joe Biden. So suggesting that because Joe Biden won the state, it means that Haider Garcia didn't rig the election in Tarrant County is absurd on its face. That is just a blatant lie. And most Republicans on the ballot in Tarrant County, other than Trump, won their race. Again, irrelevant. But once right-wingers started digging into Garcia's past, they entered full freakout mode. Born in Pennsylvania to Venezuelan parents attending Penn State, Garcia grew up in Caracas, where he studied computer engineering at the Universidad Simón Bolívar. He dreamed of working as a software developer at Pixar or EA Sports, but ended up taking a job at Smartmatic, a pioneering voting machine company founded in Venezuela. How about that? Skipping ahead. On November 21st, 2020, far-right website The Gateway Pundit published a story highlighting Garcia's Venezuelan upbringing and work for Smartmatic, which Trump supporters had implicated, along with Dominion voting systems, in an elaborate plot to steal the election through electronic voting fraud. And they were exactly right, obviously. Some variations of the conspiracy even roped in Hugo Chavez, who died in 2013. Again, totally irrelevant. That is a red herring. It doesn't matter when Hugo Chavez died. That's like saying that no-name John McCain bears no responsibility for the conflict currently happening in Ukraine, or so we are told, because he was put to death, as John Kasich says, in 2018. His death doesn't magically erase what he put in motion years and years before, and the same holds true of Hugo Chavez and Smartmatic. Tarrant County used Hart Intercivic machines, not Smartmatic ones, but that didn't seem to phase the conspiracy theorists. And again, the writer is intentionally obfuscating because it's the same software, more or less all modeled on that Smartmatic software, that is operative in all these different brands of election machine. Now let's go to this from Kanakoa the Great on X, formerly Twitter, on Monday evening. He writes, new, Mark Wingate, a Fulton County Elections Board member, testifies that he voted against certifying the 2020 election because the county did not verify signatures on 147,000 mail-in ballots. And we discussed this a bit a couple of weeks back. At the end of Kanakoa's post, he writes, Wingate's testimony was part of the disbarment hearing for former U.S. Assistant Attorney General Jeffrey Clark, who is among the 19 defendants facing various charges, including racketeering, by Fani Willis for investigating the 2020 election in Fulton County. We talked a bit about the attempts to disbar John Eastwood, I think last week. They're going after Jeffrey Clark as well. That was the man who former White House counsel Pat Philbin essentially tried to use the DOJ and a threat of mass resignations to keep him from being named as Trump's acting attorney general at the end of the first Trump term, because Clark actually wanted to pursue the claims of election fraud. The clip attached to the Kanakoa post is about 13 minutes long, so I would suggest checking that out. If you're interested, you can find it in the info stream t.me/veryreasonable on Telegram, or you can search for Kanakoa the Great on X, formerly Twitter. The post was 8.05 p.m. on April 1st. Wingate, again, testifies that no signature verification was performed in Fulton County in 2020. He said, I and other board members had requested that we obtain the chain of custody documentation from the department, and none of that was ever delivered. There was never any surveillance tape, an inch of footage delivered to the board. So when we are told that voters are able to access certain information and election integrity people are able to access certain information, that is because the media is telling us what the law allows and not what actually happens. Because As we have seen, if you are willing to steal elections, you are willing to violate other laws designed to enable election integrity. We've seen officials all around the country just straight up delete records that are supposed to be retained for 22 months. There is an entire system in place to protect these people and make sure that they cannot be held accountable for participating in election fraud. So from that perspective, why wouldn't they simply just violate a few more laws? They're going to be protected anyway, to the extent that the regime can. And I think that we are probably on the verge of seeing that the regime actually cannot protect them. Let's go to NBC News this morning. The headline, Trump and GOP leaders push to change Nebraska electoral votes to winner take all. Former President Donald Trump and Nebraska Governor Jim Pillen are calling on the state's legislature to change the way Nebraska doles out its electoral college votes, a move that would almost certainly benefit Trump in his 2024 presidential bid. While most states dole out all their electoral college votes to the statewide winner of the presidential vote, Nebraska and Maine give out one electoral vote to the candidate who wins each congressional district. Republicans have long sought to change the law, which has given Democratic presidential candidates a shot at winning one electoral college vote from the Omaha-based congressional district in the otherwise red state. That's happened twice, including in 2020, when Joe Biden won the district's electoral vote over Trump, meaning Trump's 58% support statewide got him four of the five Nebraska electoral votes. Republicans are upping the pressure on the state's nonpartisan unicameral legislature to make the change before this fall's presidential election. But despite the pressure from Republican heavy hitters, the push could fall short as the legislative session draws to a close after the previously introduced bill languished unnoticed before the sudden rush of attention. Now, we shall see whether or not this gets done. In the scenario where we have legitimate elections all across the country, this does not need to happen. Now, it's easy to say that it should happen because that would conform with how all of the other states do it. But I think it's at least an interesting conversation on whether or not the electoral college votes should be assigned by the congressional districts that match them, at least in a situation where the rest of the election system already has the fraud and rigging methods eliminated. But the freakout that has resulted from the uniparty communists is not about the constitutionality or the principles of fairness in elections. It is about the fact that it takes away, potentially, one of their routes to achieving that 270 mark in electoral college votes that would suggest that they, quote-unquote, won an election. Former Obama campaign advisor Jim Messina was on Morning Joe to freak out about this.
There has thrown his support behind an effort that would no longer allocate the electoral votes by congressional district. Because right now, it's five votes there. Typically, yeah. Republicans get four, and President Biden Democrats get the one from Omaha.
Right.
If that changes, and we don't know that it will, it's the state legislature is going to look at it. But if that changes, that takes away Biden's best path to win. Because if he wins Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, yeah, but loses the other swing states and no longer picks up the one in Nebraska, 269. That leads playbook this morning, the alarm among Democrats that this is possible. What do you think?
I think this is what the modern Republican Party has become. They're now changing the rules in the middle, trying to benefit themselves. This is the hell that Donald Trump hath wrought. In the middle of this, changing the rules 200 days before the election is ridiculous. I think you're right. I think there are real simulation problems. When you look at the map, that one electoral vote really matters in the combination of other things. Then you need another state. Yeah. And so the easiest pathway to victory has always been the Midwestern three states combined with Nebraska. Something tells me they're not going to get away with it this easy, and there will be a national outcry for trying to change the rules here.
I mean, imagine the temerity to take that standpoint against what the state legislature in Nebraska is considering doing. The state legislature is the proper place for election rules to be changed. That's not what happened from Jim Messina's side in 2020. Election rules and laws were changed by all sorts of bodies that did not include state legislatures. And in certain places, those laws and rules have been deemed unconstitutional. And for that exact reason, Jim Messina is complaining about the potential of Nebraska's legislature doing something they are constitutionally allowed to do after overseeing the process of all sorts of bodies doing things that they weren't allowed to do in 2020 and have since been reprimanded for. What was their excuse back in 2020? Oh yeah, it was COVID. We need to change everything because of this pandemic. There is a state of emergency, so we're just going to be allowed to do it. And unless the courts are going to overturn us in time, it's just going to happen. And unless you can convince courts after the fact to change and overturn the results that we generate, well, then the results are going to remain in place. And the law, the state constitution, the federal constitution, none of that matters at all. These people have no principles. They plan on that one electoral college vote in Nebraska being what puts them over the top. It's almost an admission that they have the ability to rig and steal elections in Omaha, Nebraska, and they are more than happy to do it. Now, finally, and I hate to do this to you, I am going to play a clip from Hillary Rodham Clinton in her appearance this week on Jimmy Fallon's late night quote unquote comedy show. Hillary Clinton was there, at least ostensibly, to promote a Broadway musical called Suffs about the suffragettes, the people who won women the right to vote. Consider the propaganda. This show just started last fall, and now they are promoting it right in this election cycle, so that we can hear how important it is to make sure that absolutely everybody is allowed to vote no matter what, especially illegal aliens and dead people. Wait. No. That's not what I meant. I meant real, lawful American voters. But here is the woman formerly known as Crooked Hillary. Now she is Beautiful Hillary.
Yeah. Can we talk about the upcoming presidential election?
Oh, no.
Yes, we have to. No more Easter Bunny talk. Yeah. I mean, it's Biden versus Trump.
Yes,
we know that.
It is.
What do you say to voters who are upset that those are the two choices?
Get over yourself. Those are the two choices.
Yeah. Love that.
Right?
And good.
You know, it's kind of like, one is old and effective and compassionate, yeah, has a heart and really cares about people. And one is old and has been charged with 91 felonies.
Yeah, okay.
I mean,
okay, interesting.
Yeah, I don't understand why this is even a hard choice, really. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
But we have to go through the election and hopefully people will realize what's at stake, because it's an existential question. What kind of country we're going to have, what kind of democracy we're going to have. And people who blow that off are not paying attention, because it's not like Trump, his enablers, his empowerers, his allies are not telling us what they want to do. I mean, they're pretty clear about what kind of country they want.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
get out there and vote.
Get out there and vote.
Which is a good...
Well, that's what this is really about. Get out there and vote. I mean, this is such an exciting, I would even say thrilling story of real life women, you know, great American women like Alice Paul and Ida B. Wells and Carrie Chapman Catt. I mean, real historic figures.
Yeah.
And what they went through to get us the right to vote. And so when people blow it off, and you think about these women picketing, marching, going to prison, being force-fed to get the right to vote, right? And you can't just blow it off. I mean, it was important then. It's as important right now. And the story is really powerful.
So how's that for some propaganda? I am always amazed how these people say it is so, so important to vote. And you can ask their voters, do you think it's important to vote? Yes, it's important to vote. Everybody should vote. Everybody must have the right and the ability to go out and vote. We need to increase turnout as much as possible. Anything that might lower the number of total votes recorded is voter suppression and therefore racist. Doesn't even make sense. But what else are you supposed to be arguing if your power depends on creating millions and millions of totally fake votes? You need to create narratives. You need to mythologize the process of voting and the process of even acquiring the vote in the first place. You need to tell everyone that this was the greatest accomplishment in the history of mankind, this United States election system, as if forms of government have never been contemplated throughout history. Republics have existed for thousands of years. And, by the way, for thousands of years, people have known that democracy is actually a terrible form of government. Countries like ours were set up to avoid exactly that. But people like Hillary Clinton don't agree with that, because calling it a democracy and selling that idea as though it is good and the best thing for everybody, it is the only thing that allows all voices to be represented, well, that actually provides the justification for a system of totalitarianism and complete dominance. All that is required is control by that dominant power over the election system. I'll be back tomorrow at the same reasonable time on the same reasonable podcast network. I don't have a network. Masks and lockdowns don't work. They lied to you about a pandemic. And Joe Biden will never be president.
In my mind, that's the end game.
If you're listening to this episode for free, you can support me and support the show and the work I do by signing up for a paid subscription at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as low as $50 a year or $5 a month. Comes out to under a quarter per episode, and you'll blast right through the paywall for all of the writing. The merch store is www.cancelcouture.com, and you can find everything else by heading to Linktree, linktree.com/I'm Your Moderator. And I'll see you soon out on the range.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
In my mind, that's the end game.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to follow what I'm reading and thinking throughout the day, you can do that by downloading the Telegram Messenger app and going to t.me/I'mYourModerator. On social media, you can follow me on Truth Social, Getter, and Gab at I'm Your Moderator. I also have channels on Rumble and BitChute. If you'd like to follow the writing, you can find me at imyourmoderator.substack.com. The merch site is cancelcouture.com, or go direct shop.spreadshirt.com/cancel-couture. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, the best place to do that is Ko-Fi. Go to ko-fi.com/I'mYourModerator. And all of these details will appear in the show notes with each episode. I'll see you soon
down on the range.
It's happening!